This is a Christian Science prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. It is suggested you listen to the 3-minute introduction to Christian Science and the Mary Baker Eddy Institute before listening to this recording. The topic for this recording is Omniscient. Solution. No blockage. To solve a problem, one needs to be working from a level that is higher than the level from where the problem was first noticed. In this particular prayer treatment, the object is a new office computer with multiple monitors that has high capacity, and its use will be within the performance and capacity based on its design. The computer was delivered by the vendor, and upon testing the functionality, it operated properly with only one monitor connected, but when multiple monitors were connected, only one would be recognized. The individual monitors and cables were tested independently, and the vendor had been in business many years and was very proficient. It had been tested at the shop before delivery, but only with one monitor. The purpose of this prayer treatment is to then raise the level of work from a physical level where one would utilize the normal testing and research and development, troubleshooting, and so forth, in order to solve the problem. That has been completed. So while the vendor is going to pursue the possibility of defective equipment, in this prayer treatment, we're going to address it on a different basis. In Christian Science, one does need to know what they're doing on a physical level and go through the normal steps in order to make things operational. But once that's done, then we must raise it to the spiritual level. And that's where we are right now. What is the basis of Christian Science? It's knowing that God is all, and that God is comprised of 7 basic functions with 4 operators to apply to those functions and 4 levels so that we can raise the level of thought in steps to the level required for the solution to then be accomplished. In mathematics, the functions are the 10 digits. The operators are the 4 defined as add, subtract, multiply, and divide. And the levels are multiple as well, and one could think about a simple application of add, subtract, multiply, and divide could be considered the lowest level, and using powers such as 2 cubed or 3 to the power of 4 and so forth. These exponentials be considered a higher level, and there are increasingly more complex and comprehensive levels to solve more complex problems. Christian Science is the only religion of which we are aware that includes both religion and science. Einstein states that religion without science is blind and science without religion is lame. Being involved in Christian Science gives us an enormous advantage over anyone who does not know about Christian Science and the fact that it is both a science and religion. Mary Baker Eddy defines God as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. That's from page 465, chapter 14, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13. And it is entitled Recapitulation. In the glossary, which is chapter 17 of the textbook of Christian Science, which is entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, defines God as the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. On the same page, she defines good as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipower. The four operators in divine science, tantamount to the add, subtract, multiply, and divide of mathematics, are termed the City Four Square in the book of Revelation, which is also covered in Science and Health in chapter 16. That chapter is entitled The Apocalypse, which refers to the book of Revelation in the Bible. These four operators are defined as, number one, the Word, the second one, the Christ, number three, Christianity, number four, science. The Word refers to the facts about God. The Christ refers to being able to translate, no matter what we are viewing, into either being evil of some format or perfection. And if it's evil, we must flip it to see the true nature of whatever it is we're looking at. The only thing evil represents is truth with a cover, trying to hide what is real. And it does this through deceit, posing as one thing when it's really something the opposite. So the function of the operator of the Christ enables one to translate so that the reality of perfection is recognized and therefore brought forth as the truth about whatever it is we are viewing. Jesus was an expert about this because no matter whom he viewed or what event he was involved in, he always saw the perfection. No matter whether it was a blind man or whether it was someone that supposedly was dead. With the blind man, he asked him if he had faith that he could be healed. And upon receiving a positive answer, he saw that individual as having perfect vision, as being part of his true nature, as an individual that had been revealed as perfect by God. This, in essence, is what it states in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. It said, "And let us make man after our image and after our likeness." Then God made man in his image and after his likeness. So there had to be permission within our door of consciousness to open it and let the truth flow in. And then it was reflected out to bring forth the healing. The same with Genesis chapter 26. The truth is already omnipresent, but we have to open our door of consciousness so that we spiritualize our thought and transform what otherwise is what appears to be visible defects to be the spiritual reality of perfection. Jesus did a similar thing when he saw Tabitha, the young girl who was deemed dead. And he said, "She is not dead, but sleepeth." In other words, there was not an awareness of her being alive, even though she was. So he denied the evil, which was death, and affirmed the truth. And he made the statement, "Come forth." And she did. And he treated Lazarus in the same manner. He said, "Take off the winding sheets." They wound them up with apparently cotton cloth. In other words, he was telling the sisters, Mary and Martha, to let him be free from the belief of death. So the function of the Christ is to translate from what otherwise appears to be something less than perfect to the state in our consciousness of perfection. And that reflects out and brings forth the healing as bringing a visible effect. The third function is Christianity. And this is really what brings forth the effect, because this is combining the facts about God, being able to translate to the spiritual from a material basis, and living as Jesus did, always guarding our thought, making sure that we're only accentuating the truth and not the evil. And the key synonym for God that is applied, as noticed visibly in the life of Jesus, was love. Love represents a life of giving. And a life of giving is required to bring forth healing. We cannot live a life of taking. I read something just in the last couple of days that refers to what can one take with them when they leave life on planet Earth and visible form? And what can they not take? It said you can take nothing that you received and still have, but you can take everything with you that you have given away. It's like bookkeeping. There are items that are called debits and items that are called credits. What one receives is a debit, and what one gives is a credit. So the object is to build up credits and limit debits. Therefore, when one views their credits and deducts the debits, one should have an object of building the net credits to be as large as possible. Healing is a natural result from having very little debits and huge quantity of credits. Anything visible is merely a symbol of a debit or a credit. If one has huge amounts of money, for example, or a large number of houses, large number of cars, anything tangible whatsoever, then they have a huge amount of debits. That's big trouble. Because the object is to have a huge amount of credits, not a huge amount of debits. The more debits one has, the more credits one needs to even be zero, to be even. Jesus made the remark when a woman at the synagogue contributed one mite. And Jesus said she contributed more than anyone else because she contributed everything she had. Now, in today's terms, two mites equal one penny. It doesn't matter what the quantity is. What matters is the proportion of what you have that you give away. She gave away 100%. She had no debits and all credit. So Christianity is living a life of building up credits and depleting debits. And then we are living the life of Christ Jesus. We're following in His footsteps, and also the life of Mary Baker Eddy. To this day, she is known to be the one that most clearly followed the path of Christ Jesus. And the Christian Science Church is the only church known as a church that is focused on bringing forth all well-being as a result of spiritual advancement, and therefore resulting in healing. The fourth operator is defined as science, and that means that we don't need to go through a process because it is automatically translated simultaneously. And so we are living the life of having heaven on earth. Our thought is always in a spiritual frame, always viewing everything through the lens of spirit. When Jesus attained that, he ascended. There's a very important statement by Mary Baker Eddy on page 468, which is in that same chapter recapitulation, the summary of chapters 1 through 13. And it states, "There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual." Every problem that could possibly occur is a result of debits, net debits. What are some of the examples or symbols for debits? Well, certainly if one would rob a bank, when someone thinks they may get ahead in life by doing it, they are tricking themselves. For everything they take, they're deeper and deeper in debt. So receiving money is a debit. Receiving anything that is a gift from someone else. The first was an example of stealing, but receiving a gift creates a debit. Giving that gift away or sharing that gift creates a credit. If one is taking an educational course or a complete course in education, such as school, going through elementary, grade school, junior high, high school, college, maybe post-collegiate, working on a master's or a doctorate, or further studies after receiving a doctorate. Those are all debits. If we start teaching and sharing those and giving the ideas to others, then we start building up credits. The more we share, the more credits we have, and the larger are the net credits. Andrew Carnegie spent most of his life building up debits. And his biggest prize was building the steel company and selling it to a conglomerate of individuals and companies that named it U.S. Steel. So he took his hundreds of millions of dollars and he went around the U.S. and the UK building things for the public. He built buildings and universities. He built public libraries. All kinds of things. And his goal was to spend his entire fortune. But if he did that and only that, where would he end up? with zero balance. Zero balance. Even though most successful people that make a lot of money and build up a large amount of assets become very generous and even give it all away, they're only back where they started, at zero. So what can we give to build up credits? Think about the definition of God. The seven synonymous terms to repeat are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Think about the computer, which only has one monitor that will operate at a time. How can we think about that situation? Some of the qualities of mind include creative ability, capacity, capability, functionality, facility, power, intelligence, wisdom, knowing. Those are all part of omniscience. Omnipresence, omniaction. Those are all part of mind. In Genesis chapter 1, the very first thing it discusses is that there was light. That's before the sun and the moon, or anything else that appears to be reflecting or giving off light. So the most important light we can consider is the enlightenment of ideas from God. Because that's basically what is mentioned as the very first act of God in Genesis chapter 1, the first day of creation. And Mary Baker Eddy defines that as being in the only, not in the beginning. So in the only existence that there ever was, the first thing that is recognized is light. Without light, you can't see anything else going on. And of course, that light is the light within consciousness. Spirit represents substance. And spirit is flawless because it is the opposite of matter, which we know is not only flawed, but totally opaque, whereas spirit is transparent. If you buy a diamond that is considered almost perfect, it still has a flaw. Might be small, but it is flawed. Spirit has no flaws, totally transparent, and therefore totally what? Reflective. Do we want to reflect out a spiritual atmosphere or emotions, which are strictly material and very short in lifespan? So what is the substance of mind? What is the substance of intelligence? The substance of wisdom and knowing? The substance of capacity, capability, functionality, facility, creative ability, action, omnipresence, omnipotence, omniaction? What is the substance of everything that exists, not just the qualities of mind? And that is spirit. It's a substance of everything. So if we want to give something of real value to someone, it must be spiritual in nature. Of course, what we have that is tangible, that we can touch, whether it's a beautiful oak tree or primavera tree or a beautiful rose or bougainvillea, a beautiful designed car, airplane, house, anything that is tangible, we need to be thinking about what does that represent. If it is a home that, to our thought, has a perfect design, made of quality materials, in a wonderful location, with the atmosphere that is perfect for our present thought, then we have to think of it with those qualities in mind. The perfection of design. The perfection of atmosphere. The perfection of quality in the construction materials. The beauty of seeing everything together. Love is the wholeness. So if it's complete, it's representing love. The third synonymous term for God is soul. And you may think of your senses as being material, and by that I mean seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. But the real senses are the substance of spirit, and therefore they are spiritual seeing, spiritual hearing, spiritual feeling, smelling, and tasting. The fourth synonymous term is principle. What do you think of when you think of principle? I think it's natural to think of structure. And you need a system for that structure to operate. So the structure with the system for the how the structure operates, that is principle. And it always must be harmonious, always must be balanced, or it's not going to last. And of course, it has to be thought of as being spiritual in substance. The fifth term to represent the functionality and the qualities of God is life. What do you think life represents? It's bringing vitality to the qualities of God in our own experience. Now, if we're going to be doing that, we got to realize it's going to be spiritual. And if it's spiritual, then what do we need to do? Reflect it out to everyone. We have to express the joy of life, the permanence of life, the activity of life, the intelligence. If we don't conduct our life in an intelligent way, we've got big trouble. That means mind is coordinating its qualities with life, and vice versa. And it's the way with all seven of the synonymous terms. They work together in one grand network. So you're expressing the qualities of God when you're expressing life, because those are the only real qualities, because those are the only thing that are made up of substance. If you're playing tennis or driving a race car, piloting a jet plane, walking through the woods, doing dishes, preparing dinner, cleaning the floor, changing the sheets on your bed, doing the laundry. Everything you do can be condensed down to a symbol that represents God. And the more we think about how it represents God, the more we have God in our thought. And the more we have God in our thought, the more we build up. What do you think that is? A debit or a credit? If you want to have a lot of credits, you've got to forget about thinking about the devil, because the devil is a debit. It's almost spelled the same way. D-E. And it has an I in it. Evil is E-V with an I. Am I going to be the devil? Am I going to be evil? Or am I going to be spiritual and have a credit? Being spiritual gives you credits. Being material gives you debits. And if you don't watch it, you will have a minus score of combining your debits and credits. Truth is the sixth term for God in the order of the days of creation that relates to Genesis chapter 1. And truth is the opposite of a mistake. If you add 2 plus 4 and get 14, you've got a problem. You've got a debit, because it's not the truth. If you're working with truth, you have credits. If you're working with a mistake, you have debits. Truth is staying on the path of perfection. How should we be thinking about the computer? It has one credit and many debits, because the capacity of the computer is many monitors, and they don't work. Could that be a symbol of God? Not in visible form. Are we going to do what Jesus would do? See a blind man? These monitors are blind. They can't see a thing. They don't work. So we got many blind monitors and only one that is a credit. We have to deny that there can be anything defective that is an idea of God. Is a computer an idea of God? What exists besides God? The Bible tells us that God is all. So what exists besides God? What is it that we see? Do we see a computer? Do we see a person walking down the street? Can we touch them? Can we take them with us when we leave planet Earth as our experience? Are they a debit or a credit? In material form, they're a debit. If we think about the spiritual qualities that represent their real components, then we're thinking credits. A computer can be very useful, especially one with many monitors, if you have a need for many monitors. But we have to think about who provided the intelligence for designing the computer, or the monitors, or the cables, or the graphics card, the power cord, everything about the computer, the motherboard, the memory, the storage capacity of hard drives. Everything about that computer represents an idea. It represents intelligence. If God is all, as the Bible states, then what intelligence does man have? What's that thing above your head, or in the top part of your head? I guess it's somewhere in there. It's called a brain. Is that any good? Well, how is it used? Is it used to figure out how to rob a bank? Or something more constructive? Could it be a symbol of real intelligence? Not in material form. Material form, it's born, grows, maxes out, depletes, and expires. And it could be a very fast process if it's an accident. We have to convert everything to a quality. If we remember something, give credit to mind. For one of the qualities of mind, which is part of omniscience, is knowing. Also, intelligence and wisdom. Being able to make the right decision is wisdom. Give credit to God. Give credit to mind. Give credit to intelligence. Did you do something intelligent? Give credit to the only real source of intelligence. What kind of an IQ does God have? What kind of an IQ does the infinite mind have? It's an IQ of infinity. Because God is infinite. Could a mistake be made when that computer was produced, manufactured, tested, and delivered? Who has the capacity to make mistakes? Or I should say, what has the capacity? Error. That's error's only capacity, is to be error. It's nothing but mistake. It's a facade of truth, which means the opposite. It's truth covered up. We have to think about anything that is useful, and certainly a computer with multiple monitors, if that's what you need, is useful. We have to think of it as an idea of the creative ability of mind that has the capacity, capability, functionality, facility that cannot be blocked. It can't be limited. It can't be diverted. It can't be deflected. It can't be diluted. Nothing can block the perfection of the intelligence of God. You can't get there. You can't get there from here or anywhere else. Nothing can be blocked. Everything is open. If our thought is open to the truth, then the intelligence cannot be blocked. The more clear our understanding is about all intelligence having the source of God, and that we are God's manifestation, and manifestation is the same as the source, because a source is not a source unless there is a manifestation. So the manifestation is included as part of the source. Otherwise, it's not a source. If one has a need, can they define that in detail? Can one that has a need define the need in detail? The greater detail you can define a need, the more you understand the need. And the more you understand the need, the more you can understand that there has to be a supply. Because principle is defined as being balanced, harmonious. So wherever there is a need, somewhere there is that identical matching supply. And in order for supply to be a supply, it has to be exactly matching a need. And vice versa. So if there's a need, you can only define the need if you can define the supply. If you can define the supply, then it exists. Because everything exists in mind. And it is made real as a symbol that is tangible the more clearly you have it as an idea. Because principle is defined as having balance, harmonious. There are no exceptions. If anyone has seen the movie entitled Joshua, that has some very interesting messages in it. It's about an individual that shows up in a small village, and he conducts his life in a very spiritual manner. And obviously, the Bible plays an important part in the movie. And he referred to the Bible as the book of love. Now, love is the last synonymous term. And so, therefore, what do you think is the overpowering term to define love? What's the last thing that happens? Completeness. Wholeness. Fulfillment. But you can't have it without the qualities of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth, because they are all components. So love is an expression of all of them. Just as mind is required in love. You have to express love in an intelligent way. Your love has to be spiritual. You must identify things in a spiritual manner. Your principle has to be a structure based on spirit, not matter. If it's based on matter, it's like building a sandcastle on the beach. The first wave that comes along that has enough force with it and goes far enough, it will level your sandcastle. Everything about all of the synonymous terms reflect the qualities of all the other synonymous terms. If you don't have intelligence in truth, you're not going to be able to distinguish what is true and what is false. Truth also includes motive and the carrying out of the motive. In a court of law, they always want to know what the motive is. If they have no motive, then the man must be innocent, or whoever it is, woman, child. The guilty one must have a motive. Our motive in learning about God must be that we are beginning to understand a little bit about debits and credits. So love is cultivating. What does a mother do? A mother nurtures. What does a father do? A father gives life, activity, courage, perseverance, safety, protection. And the mother nurtures up to perfection, always goes after the weak and builds them up to be strong. Like a shepherd, they go after the sheep that strayed away. Or a cowboy, he goes after the cattle that are walking away from the herd. When we express what we think are qualities of love, which are tenderness and kindness and consideration and those kinds of things, and when we're nurturing, we always have to be doing it with the qualities of intelligence and wisdom and knowing. We have to know what we're doing. We have to be wise in our decisions on how we're going to express the love. We have to be intelligent. Mary Baker Eddy states that she makes strong demands on love. She doesn't think of love as something that's wishy-washy. Love is not just letting a young child that doesn't know how to protect himself from traffic run out in the road and in the street where he's mixing with anything that's too big, like a car or a truck or a bus or a taxi or anything, any danger. Intelligence is not stepping into danger. When Jesus was tempted by the devil in the three temptations, he didn't bite. The devil said, well, God will save you. Jump off of the temple or synagogue, whatever it was. He says, jump off of the top of it. He said, God will save you. And Jesus said, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God, is what it says in the Bible. It doesn't say, tempt the Lord thy God to jump off and see if he'll save you. We don't purposely enter danger to see if God's going to save us. If we're put in a position that we're in danger, that's a different story. We have to give up the fear that would normally enter into thought, and we have to know that we can be confident that there's a solution. The same formula works whether we're dealing with a computer that has multiple screens and only one works at a time, as when we're in a house on fire. You go to the one mind. You take the steps that are intelligent, which means you run out of the house or the building that is on fire. And with a computer, you go through the normal tests. You make sure, is it plugged in? Do you have power? Are your cables all working? If you're running out of a building that's on fire, you're going to go where the path is. If you've got the fire in front of you, you're going to go somewhere in a different direction. No matter what problem we're tackling, we approach it in the same way. The only difference is the evil that is being presented is probably unique to that particular situation. And therefore, we have to dig and find the evil and deny that it has any power or truth, and recognize what the opposite is to what the evil is, and we affirm that. So we deny the evil and we affirm the truth about that particular situation, that particular individuality of the situation. We must know that the design, when we're dealing with a quality company with a quality product, we must know that the design, the intelligence of everything about that computer is not from man who makes mistakes or a manufacturing facility that tries to just keep the costs low and put in cheap materials, because we're buying a quality product from a quality company who backs up their products with a guarantee. That's how Walmart built, that's how Sam Walton built Walmart into such a large company. In fact, the largest retail, consumer retail organization in the world, by giving service. He was building up credits. Gave service. Take anything back anytime for any reason. We want you to be happy. Frederick L. Rawson is one of the most brilliant Christian Scientists that we're aware of. And he said, our purpose on life is to make other people happy. He was totally focused on building up credits. Totally. He had 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, the healing was effective. Same with Joel Goldsmith. Same with Wentworth Winslow. All three of them had 15-minute appointments. And there's no evidence they knew each other whatsoever. Frederick L. Rawson was from England. Wentworth Winslow was from the New York area. Joel Goldsmith, I don't know where his original home was, but he ended up over in Hawaii. And they all had their own unique approach. Frederick L. Robson was an electrical engineer. So he came from a very scientific background. Wentworth Winslow's family were businessmen. I don't recall offhand what Joel Goldsmith's background was before he was involved in science. But he walked into the Malevolent Association, called Joel Goldsmith, because he was called there by one of the patients. It's a nursing home for Christian Scientists. To be in there, you have to have a practitioner assisting you with healing. And he was called as a practitioner to go and help the individual. And he entered the reception area. And the receptionist says, "You don't want to go in there. Everyone's sick. Everyone in the whole building is sick." She said, "They all have the same problem, and it's contagious. So you don't want to go in there." He said, "How many people do you have here?" And she told him, I don't know, it was in the hundreds. And he said, "Everyone has the same problem." She said, "Yes. We got, and however many it was, we got that many problems." He said, "You only have one problem. There's only one problem here. It's the belief that that illness is real. That everyone here is separated from their source, which is God. And that God has no power or capacity to be perfect. God lost his perfection." Well, I don't think he had a conversation with the receptionist other than the fact that he said, "You only have one problem." Because he then went over and sat down in the seating area, in the reception area, and was quiet by himself. And I'm just saying what I think he was probably thinking in his own thought. But he told the receptionist that you only have one problem. But no matter what we're dealing with as a problem, if we're looking for a solution, we automatically have to think about the definition of God, the scientific statement of being. And what are the first three quotes at the beginning of the textbook? Mary Baker Eddy thought truth was a very important thing, because the very first quote there is a quote from Jesus' words that's recorded by John in the Gospel of John, and it says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." What does it mean to know? Understand. If we've got a computer that's not operating the way it should, and everything indicates that it should, from a physical standpoint, you know, it's new, quality, good company. It was designed for the capacity for which we are desiring to use it. In other words, plugging in multiple monitors instead of putting in something in there to operate multiple monitors when maybe the motherboard doesn't have the capacity to handle the graphics card. Everything indicates that it should be working. Now, if it is defective and needs to be replaced, that thought will come to us. If we are getting our thought in alignment with truth. So Mary Baker Eddy says we should think about truth number one, because that's the first quote at the very beginning of the textbook before you get to the preface or table of contents or any of the chapters. Now, what's the second quote? There's three quotes total. The second one is from Shakespeare. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Our thinking provides our experience. What kind of thoughts are we going to put into consciousness? What kind of thoughts are we going to entertain? What are we going to contemplate with our time? Because that's going to determine the life that we're going to experience. And there's an unlimited number of moments in a 24-hour period. Because a moment means the smallest measurement of time. It's not defined by numbers that can be divided. It is defined by the word. Just like infinity is defined by a word. So how are we going to use our time? Are we going to build up credits or debits? Are we going to think about the perfection of God and the perfection of the intelligence that was provided in order to design a computer with such a wonderful capacity from a quality company at a fair price that backs it with a guarantee? Are we going to be given the idea on exactly what we should be doing to realize the solution? Because if there's ever any kind of a problem about anything, we've got to come out of the starting gate knowing that the solution is already determined. Because God has no limitation whatsoever. And God is only a three-letter word that defines all the truth about all existence. So whenever you think of God, you've got to be thinking of the qualities of God. Think about the only thing that exists are qualities. Qualities, qualities, all are qualities. Or you could say all is qualities. Thinking of all of the qualities as a group, as a network, as wholeness, completeness. We have to know that since we have done the basic things and we're not trying to bring about magic and have a computer work when we didn't plug in the power cord, we've approached it in an intelligent manner and checked everything out as one should. And now it's up to us understanding that we're going to be given the exact solution that is needed to bring forth wholeness, completeness, perfection. And we cannot let anything interfere, can't let anything block that truth from flowing into our consciousness. Because the only communicator is the intelligence of mind. That's the communicator. It's not a telephone. It's not a computer. It's not a telegram service. It's not a letter. All communication is in mind. The other things are just symbols. The beauty of a wonderful tree, just a gorgeous, everything perfect about it. That's not the beauty of the tree. The tree is a symbol of the beauty of mind, the beauty of spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. Those combined bring forth the complete concept of the tree. That's where everything comes from. We have to know that nothing can block the solution to be revealed to our thought. Nothing. Nothing has the power. We can't be separated from God. We are the manifestation of the source. God is the source. We are the manifestation. We can't be separated. God couldn't exist without his manifestation. So we cannot be separated. We cannot be ignorant. Because God is intelligence. We can't lack the knowledge that we need because God is all-knowing. And we went through the steps to know about our business, what we're doing. About knowing how to operate the computer. Knowing how to make the decision on the right one to buy for the needs. We have demonstrated the knowledge by going through the research to be able to come up with the proper solution. And there cannot be anything that can block the wholeness of the whole concept. Nobody can take a piece out of it. There was a talent show out of Britain, and they have amateur people that have an opportunity to perform there and compete. And the one fella came on the stage, and he was very heavy. And he came with a girl that was a beautiful, lovely shaped woman. She was 16 and he was 17. And they met through their singing teacher. They were there to perform singing. And they met through their singing teacher. And they, it didn't indicate how long they had known each other, but she introduced them and thought that if either one of them were going to go on this show where they're going to perform and be judged on whether or not they should be awarded and give them an opportunity to get into the kind of profession that they were looking for, which was singing opera. That, you know, this was an opportunity to be introduced to the world. So the man running the show of the judges he asked how they were doing, the polite thing that he asks every contestant that comes on the floor. And the girl started talking, and she told him in two or three sentences that everything was fine and so forth. And so when she got done saying that, and he said, well, why are you here, and so forth. And when she got done saying a few sentences, he looked at the fellow and he said, you don't say much, do you? Not that he had any opportunity, because she was really explaining the answer to the question. But anyway, that's what he said. And he said, sometimes, he said, are you shy? And he said, sometimes. And so then it showed him answering the question more completely, which had evidently been recorded after the fact or something. And they just wanted to kind of orient the public to know a little bit about their background before they started their performance. And so he said, because of my size, I've always been kidded And every time somebody made a negative comment about me, it would take a little piece out of me. So he was affected emotionally from negative comments, which is probably what the average person would do and how they would feel. But when we're dealing with spirit, nobody can take a piece away because it's complete. Love is complete. The love of spirit is complete. The love of mind is complete. Mind is not lacking anything. Mind isn't lacking any intelligence. Mary Baker Eddy asked Laura Sargent, one of her top students that lived in the home, that was working on her CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. And she said, Laura, do you sometimes forget? What do you think the answer was? Three words. Mind never forgets. That was the end of the story. Mary Baker Eddy found out what she wanted to find out. She was testing her to see if she always relied on mind for her intelligence and her knowing and her wisdom. One needs to go through each of the synonymous terms for God and affirm that some of the words for each of those terms are being expressed in whatever the problem seems to be. In other words, the ideas, the design, the knowledge, the wisdom, the intelligence, the creative ability, the capacity, capability, functionality, the facility, the action, everything that is needed to manufacture, to design, manufacture, and provide the finished product. For that computer, every single quality came from mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So there cannot be anything lacking. Nothing. It is whole. It is complete. It fulfills the ticket for being a complete product that is ready to go. And if there's something that needs to be fixed on it, that information will be forthcoming to us, clear, concise, and effective. Because the only source of any knowledge is from the infinite mind that knows all. Doesn't matter where we are. Because everything about God is omnipresent. And this same information of whatever is needed will be revealed to whomever it needs to be revealed to, so they will be able to take the action that is needed to solve the problem. The fact that they may not know anything about Christian Science has nothing to do with it. We have to know that that computer is a product of an idea of God, because it is a function that is going to perform, in fact, in this case, it's going to perform to assist in maintaining the website. The website is provided as a gift to humanity. the volunteers that make it come about. It's all credits, gift to humanity. The ones that are paid from the Institute are only the programmers that are outside contractors. Everyone within the Institute are volunteers. We give everything we have. Some of us work our waking hours devoted to the website. Nothing can interfere with the gift to humanity that the website provides. Nothing. We don't have competition. We means God and us. It's like Clint Eastwood. He was in a situation, a difficult situation, and there were some people did some evil acts. And he said, "You don't think we're going to let you get out of here free without having justice brought about?" And they said, "What do you mean we?" He said, "Smith, Wesson, and me." His gun was manufactured by Smith and Wesson. We're manufactured by God. It's we. It's God and me, God and you. Because we're all together. We all have the same father, mother. Mary Baker Eddy defines the Lord's Prayer, the first verse, which is "Our Father, which art in heaven," defined as our Father, Mother God, all harmonious. That's the spiritual sense of it that Mary Baker Eddy has in Science and Health. Father, Mother God, all harmonious. That's what heaven is. Our Father which art in heaven. Our Father means our Father and our Mother, and heaven means harmony. Everything that's harmonious is heaven. If someone thinks about something that is perfect, it is often said that it is divine. And that's exactly what divine is. It's perfect. It's perfection. It's a symbol that there is absolutely no mistake. So it's a symbol of truth. No error. If it lasts forever, it's a symbol of spirit. If we convert everything from a material, visible standpoint to the spiritual nature, we're building up credits because we're thinking about God. We're giving our thought to God. We're giving our consciousness to God. We're giving our effort, our being. We're saying, "Here I am, God. Do with me what you will. You want me to do something? I'm listening." One needs to look at every single synonymous term and relate it to whatever the problem seems to be. If we have a broken arm, we can say there is no broken relationship between God and his manifestation. It is a direct, perfect, whole relationship. It's better not to mention the physical thing, for example, the arm or the computer, but refer to the functionality, the quality. The computer is going to show us the view of what? The view of goodness. The view of something that will benefit everyone. Nothing can interfere with seeing what needs to be seen, with understanding what they're looking at and reading or listening to. And there isn't any tool that God provides that can malfunction. Anything that is a good idea is being provided by God. It can apply to anything. A pair of shoes that are serviceable and good quality. A car. If a car is not operating, you can treat it like you would a computer or anything else. A popcorn machine, you know, your stove or refrigerator. All of these things that are visible are only an idea as a symbol of these qualities that were required to make them become useful. Can anything separate us from the usefulness of the one and only God? The more we use God, the more we build up credits, because we're yielding self to divinity. And that only builds up credits. If we want to hold on to what we have, that's a debit. That's a debit. We go deeper and deeper in the hole with every debit we have. Are we identifying, or do we know that every individual component of God's idea is operational? See, we're talking about the computer, but we don't talk computer language. We talk the function of the quality. The same with electricity. The same with anything that is a useful tool for functionality. We have to know there is absolutely nothing that has the power to negate omnipotence. Everything about God is omni, which means one, only, and all. It doesn't mean part of it. It doesn't mean a piece of it is missing. It doesn't mean that there's ignorance. No, God is not ignorance. We have to flip it. If we see someone make a very stupid mistake, the first thing we've got to do is turn to God and know that intelligence is the reality of man. Forget the guy's name. Don't think about a human mind or a human person. Think about God and God's idea and what he represents. God's idea represents a reflection of God, the reflection of the intelligence of mind, or the creative ability of mind, if it's someone that is working on a so-called invention. An invention is only a rearrangement of known facts that are in a different order than what they were ever put together with that has been known. But you're only looking at things that are true. You may not have known about it before, but it's always been true. The Bible says there is nothing new under the sun. And Mary Baker Eddy said, the first chapter of Genesis where it says in the beginning, she says that means in the only. One thing you have to remember is that chapter 1 of Genesis up through verse 3 is the record of the true creation of the universe. And beginning with verse 4 in chapter 2, the root word for God changes from Elohim, which is what it is previous to verse 4, to Jehovah, which is what it is starting with verse 4. And wherever it says Jehovah, that is the false concept of God. That's the God of the Adam dream. That's the God that says we were born a sinner. That's the God that says we go through a material birth, life, peak out, expire, and it's over with. Which one do you want to focus on? Do you want to build up debits or credits? The second chapter of Genesis will never give you credits if you focus on that. Who wants to be thinking about themselves as born a sinner? It seems like most of Christianity is convinced that they are born a sinner. Some very good people that know the Bible backwards and forwards and being able to quote an enormous number of things by memory, I've seen several of them start out when they talk in public, or, you know, I see it on the internet, some verse or something that attracted me. And it says, I know I'm not perfect. There's nothing in Genesis chapter 1 through verse 3 of chapter 2 that says God made man imperfect. And before it talks about man having problems, which is starting with verse 4 chapter 2, it says, and there went up a mist, M-I-S-T, a mist. Can you see clearly in a mist? I've been in a fog that you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. Fortunately, I was stationary. I wasn't driving a car or anything like that. But yeah, you couldn't see anything. Holding your hand up just inches from your nose, you could not see it. We can see if we rely on the mind of God, the spiritual sense of sight instead of a material sense of sight. No matter what the object is, whether it's a computer, whether it's a broken arm, whether it's maybe you don't have a home to stay in, maybe you're living on the street. Maybe you're in a wheelchair. Maybe you are a stray dog. Do you hear that, all stray dogs? It doesn't matter. The idea is that we have to understand what the scientific statement of being says, that there's no life, truth, and intelligence in matter, and all is infinite mind. Realize that matter is not real substance. Spirit is real substance. I'm going to close by saying two things. One is that we must live a life of giving, and that means that we want to give credit gratitude to everyone that assisted us in the understanding that we have at whatever level we are, that we need to be grateful for it, and many of them sacrificed everything. A number of Bible characters and people that discovered things about astronomy, they were put in prison because it was so different than what people were used to understanding. When it was discovered that Earth was not flat, the man that discovered that Earth rotates around the sun instead of Earth being the center and everything rotated around it. So many things were discovered by those who were thinking outside of the box, and they ended up being martyrs. Maybe they spent the rest of their life in prison. Maybe they were executed. But they had big problems because they discovered something that was true and the public was not ready to believe it. Let that be a lesson. If you really get serious about Christian Science, if you're not so now, you must be careful with whom you share it, because unless they have a receptive thought, it's not the right time in their experience with whom to share it. There are seekers, and we must be alert so that we recognize them and handle it in the way that we're led to do it. Everyone we have an opportunity to learn from, whether it's about God or about human nature, whatever it is, we can learn from every contact we have. We can learn from every observation we make. It's our responsibility to do it. These tidbits are given to us as angel messages. I shall now read a prayer from Mary Baker Eddy that she taught to her class who were working on their CSD degree, which was in 1898. That was the last class of the Metaphysical College, and the only other ones that had an opportunity to earn that degree were the ones that lived in her home, and she was teaching on a daily basis about how to live as a Christian Scientist. I shall now read one of her prayers on Diapason of Heaven. She provided one for each of the seven synonymous terms, and I will read one of them to you and close with that reciting. Since we have discussed in substantial detail the term for mind, this will be the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on mind. She presented this with an introduction from Miscellaneous Writings, page 206. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this Diapason of Heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen.